Revolutions Per Minute is a weekly radio show from the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, recorded live at WBAI 99.5 in Brooklyn every Tuesday at 5. RPM is about doing the work to build a democratic socialist future. Every week, hear the latest news, analysis, and organizing experience from the minds and hearts of activists fighting every day in NYC. Join the movement at socialists.nyc.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on WBAI, a socialist radio show and podcast from members of New York City Democratic Socialists of America. I'm one of your hosts today, Desiree Joy Frias.
I am here also your host, Michael Carter.
Today's episode is an update on the Housing Justice for All campaign. We will discuss last Tuesday's action in Albany and the nine bills we are asking every state assembly person and senator to sign on to.
Today we'll be discussing the Housing Justice for All campaign, a movement of tenants throughout the state who are fighting for state-level legislation to address New York's housing and homelessness crisis. But first, the headlines.
Yo, it's good New York. This is Jack Devine with Revolutions Per Minute's headlines, brought to you by The Thorn. In the aftermath of last week's housing march in Albany, many of the state's most powerful unions, even some that rarely take a stand against the governor, publicly came out in support of the Housing Justice for All platform to pass nine bills that expand New York's rent regulations next month. We'll be discussing the platform throughout the rest of the episode. On the opposing side of things, building contractors protested at a state Senate hearing on rent reform, expressing concern that they'll no longer be able to suck tenants dry if rent increases based on major capital improvements are eliminated, which is one of the major planks of the Housing Justice for All campaign. Comptroller Scott Stringer released a plan to expand child care to children from birth to age 3, funded through a new payroll tax. The plan would have to be approved by the state legislature to go through. The Green Light Act, which would grant New York driver's license to non-citizen residents, now supposedly has the support of the state assembly and Governor Cuomo, but is being held up in the Senate. In national news, last week, the Alabama governor signed the most restrictive abortion bill in the country. It punishes doctors who perform abortions with life in prison and has no exemptions for rape and incest victims. Other draconian anti-choice bills have been passed by reactionary state legislatures across the country in an effort to overturn Roe v. Wade. These assaults on reproductive rights represent an absolute barbaric means of violently disciplining working-class women. All abortion should be legal and free on demand. In international news, in Brazil this past week, over a million demonstrators hit the streets in more than 200 cities nationwide. It was the coming together of unions, professors, teachers, students, campaign groups, political parties, and other diverse factions to defend public education from attacks by the fascist Bolsonaro regime. It was the strongest display of unity on the left that Brazil has seen in decades and could be the birth of a new movement. Another mass action is scheduled for May 30th. Now, let's hear from Lee Zishi on the Public Power NYC picket at the Con Ed shareholders meeting yesterday.
This is Lee Zishi for Revolutions Per Minute on WBAI. I'm here with Sarah Lyons outside the Con Ed shareholders meeting. And can you just tell us what's going on right now?
Yes. So right now, Con Ed is having a shareholders meeting. It's a closed-door meeting where the public is not invited to. We do not know what goes on in these meetings. We don't know what gets decided. But what we do know is that people magically go into those rooms and somehow they come out with a lot more money. Their shareholders are given people on the Con Edison board of directors are given $100K just for showing up, just for being there as just a nice little present to them. And their CEO makes over $9 million a year. While they are trying to raise our rates to pay for accidents that they cause by their own negligence and for making a profit off of basically, you know, harming the environment and harming all of us.
Yeah, I see a lot of the signs, you know, that say climate criminal. Can you just kind of elaborate a little bit on that?
Sure. I mean, I think that it's time that we start looking at people who profit off of the death of the planet, off of, you know, harming our communities. We should start looking at these as criminal acts, that, you know, this is not, you know, they're making a profit off of harm, not just harm to the environment, but harm to all of us, harm to our communities, harm to our health, harm to future generations.
And how does this fit into, you know, your larger campaign?
Sure. So we're not the only ones calling for a public utility grid right now. There are other people in San Francisco, in East Bay, in Providence, across the country. People are calling for not just renewable energy, but for that renewable energy to be owned and run and operated by the community. So for a publicly owned energy grid.
Public power. Now. Public power. Now.
What do we want?
Public power.
What do we want?
Now.
Thank you, Lee, for that amazing report on the great organizing work going into decommodifying and democratizing energy in our society. Now let's turn back to Michael and Desiree on the struggle to make housing a human right.
Our daily headlines are brought to you by The Thorn, an incredible weekly newsletter by NYC DSA Electoral Working Group, covering local politics and radical activism. Subscribe at thethorn.nyc.
So welcome to our episode updating you on the Housing Justice for All campaign. My name is Desiree Dre Frias, I use she, her pronouns, and I'm on the organizing committee for the Bronx Upper Manhattan branch. Here also in the studio is Dennis Osorio, he, him, a member of the Bronx Upper Manhattan branch. He's one of the organizers for Housing Justice for All and leads canvassing every Sunday in districts of elected officials who don't support these nine bills.
My name is Michael Carter. I use he, him pronouns, and I am a Central Brooklyn DSA member. I also work as the communications director for State Senator Julia Salazar. Here on the phones is Sia Weaver, she, her, a member of the Central Brooklyn branch and working group coordinator for the steering committee. Sia is the campaign coordinator for the Housing Justice for All campaign, which is a coalition of tenants organizations and homeless organizations from across all of New York State.
So as we know, the rent is way too high. It outstrips what we can afford based on our incomes. 100 people a day across New York State are evicted from their homes and thousands sleep homeless every night. So last week, over 2,000 tenants from across the state woke up way too early and got on buses to Albany, including over 50 members of New York City DSA. What I found was that the turnout was incredible. We had people from all over New York City and state, Buffalo, Rochester, Poughkeepsie, all the way from Long Island. They took 5 hours to get up there, and in total it was about 1,500 to 2,000 people. They did chants in five languages, and there were people represented there of all ages, from seniors to parents with their children. What this highlighted for me being there was that the housing crisis is intersectional. It's hitting everybody, regardless of class, ethnicity, age, or what part of the state they live in.
So, Dennis, you were there on the ground doing some of the organizing around this. What were some of the challenges that you faced? What were some of the stories that you heard? What is your kind of takeaway from the day of action?
So I found it to be a fantastic day. It was a really good feeling to see that many people, that many tenants swarm and basically bring Albany like shut down with the sheer number of people, the number of tenants there. That was a really powerful day, and I thought it was fantastic.
And around how many folks made it out?
So it's estimated somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 people from around the city and around the state descended in Albany and really just clogged up the works.
Awesome. You know, a lot of folks, they kind of assume that this is a primarily New York City issue. I was wondering, through your experience about the upstate tenants and the Long Island tenants that you met, how do their struggles coincide with what we're facing here in the city?
I think you're right. I think it's too easy for politicians to perceive this as a New York City specific problem. But really, talking to tenants from around, whether they're in Poughkeepsie, whether they're in Albany, whether they're in Buffalo, we're all united with a lot of the same abuses that landlords foist upon their tenants. So I think, yeah, there's a lot more that we're in common.
And what was great was we split up all of these people into different action groups. They were separated by colored bands because organizing 2,000 people for anything is really, really hard. And I think that the way that it turned out so well shows how organized and put together the Housing Justice for All campaign is. So the different teams, like one of them was doing art and signs for the rally at the end, and we're doing spoken word. And then we had teams of 30 to 50 people go to Cuomo's office, Carl Hastie's office, and Andreas Dior-Cousins' office to deliver petitions signed by their constituents. There was another group of people that went to legislators that are not on board with these bills and delivered them fake 30-day eviction notices that if they refused to support the bills in the next 30 days, we would essentially threaten them with primary at their next election. And throughout all that, there was lots of chanting in the hallways, and we even ran into one of our people who was very key in this fight, State Senator Brian Kavanaugh. And we delivered to him 700 postcards signed by constituents with their address and their signature and literally put them into his hands in the hallway. So what was that moment like for you, Dennis?
So I only saw the video, but it was quite a video to see his constituents, like, give him a stack of postcards and he holds it in his hand and then he blinks and suddenly there's another stack. He blinks and suddenly there's another stack and he's like buried in stacks of postcards that he can barely juggle and hold onto in his arms. It was really powerful to see him struggle under the weight of those postcards.
And for a little context for our listeners, Brian Kavanaugh is the chair of the New York State Senate Committee on Housing. So these bills have to pass through his committee in order to become law in the state of New York.
Yeah, and we received a lot of positive feedback and coverage by the media. Dennis, you put some of that together for us.
Yeah. So through some of the email chains that I've been a part of, people have been collecting and sharing press clips as a result of our action in Albany, and I counted at least 17 different new articles from different news organizations. You know, that included The Gothamist, that included USA Today, really from around, you know, from every part of New York State was reporting on this.
And there was also reports made in Spanish on Univision
and
Telemundo. So I think it's really important that people realize, like, this is not just a problem for English speakers. This is not just a problem for people of certain races. This is an intersectional problem that's affecting everybody.
We actually have some original content, some recorded content from the march itself. So here we are. Our field correspondent, Cameron Orr, got an interview with one of the participants in the march.
I'd like to give your name and organization while you're here.
So my name is Aisha Ogilvy. I'm here because I'm a tenant of New York City, but I'm also the chair of Housing and Human Services for Community Board 12 of Manhattan. Our community board passed unanimously a resolution in support of all of these issues that we're addressing in the Universal Rent Control platform. Because housing is a human right, because there's a housing crisis, and we cannot continue to allow it to exist the way that it is. People deserve to have a place to live. People deserve to not be displaced from communities that they've built, communities that they've lived in for so long. But just anyone deserves a right to live, to have a place to live.
Yeah. Awesome. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
And can you get your name one more time?
Aisha Ogilvy. You want me to spell it?
Sure.
A-Y-I-S-H-A.
Okay.
And my last name is O-G-L-I-V-I-E.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. To connect with us after the show, you can email us at revolutionsnyc@gmail.com or sign up for our newsletter to get links to what we talk about on the show. You can do that on our website, revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com. You can also find us on Twitter, at NYCRPM. Today, we're talking about housing justice. But before we continue our conversation, I just wanted to, you know, reach out to the listeners here. You love the content that we're talking about today. The landlords don't want you to be listening to WBAI. They don't want you to hear the perspective about radical organizing, about people on the ground fighting back against the powerful people in society. And mainstream corporate media, never covers anything like this. You don't, I mean, sometimes you get a nice article out there, but you're not going to see this on MSNBC or CNN, or you're not even going to hear that much on NPR until the, you know, the real explosion happens, in a sense, not actual blowing up, but you know what I mean. So if you want to, you know, become part of the WBAI team, contribute to make sure that there's more socialist content out there on the radio, give WBAI a call at 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. And just donate what you can. You know, be part of this movement of, you know, building people power. And WBAI is a critical front in that struggle. And you can also pledge on the web. You can go to give2, that's the number two, WBAI.org. give2WBAI.org. Or you can text us on your phone, and you just text WBAI to 4144. 41444. Sorry about that. So if you want more democratic socialist content, if you want to hear about the struggles happening on the ground, like today we're talking about organizing for housing justice, decommodifying housing, making housing a human right. So if you want to hear more about the struggles, please become part of the WBAI team. Thank you very much.
So I believe we have Sia Weaver on the line.
Yeah, I'm here.
Awesome. So first off, we'd love to just get more perspective on specifically what is in this package of bills. I know there's 9 bills. I know one of them is about good cause eviction legislation that would extend rent protections to the entire state. I was wondering if you and Dennis could kind of go through just 1 through 9, what each of these things do and why they're important to come together.
Okay. So I can start, if that makes sense, and then Dennis, you can jump in and add some others, or it should be, how do you want us to split them up?
That sounds great.
Okay, so I'm going to sort of group the bills. The Emergency Tenant Protection Act of 1974 creates rent stabilization in New York City and the 8 and the 3 surrounding counties. It applies to buildings with 6 or more units that rent for less than about $2,700 a month, and that were built before 1974. The Emergency Tenant Protection Act has been weakened over many years by the landlord influence in Albany. So right now, rent stabilization is no longer working the way it's intended to work. Rather than protecting and preserving the communities where people live, it's really no longer working to protect tenants' rights. So many of our bills right now are referred to sort of like strengthening the and closing the loopholes in the Emergency Tenant Protection Act. So those loopholes include rent increases that happen for tenants during vacancy and rent increases that happen while a tenant is still living there. The increases that apply while tenants are still living there are major capital improvement increases. So we have a bill that would eliminate major capital improvement increases. Those are the increases that landlords can apply to apartments when they do things like make a roof repair or fix a boiler, and preferential rents. Preferential rents happen when a landlord charges less than what they're legally allowed to charge, and they can then revoke that preferential rent, and tenant rents can go up by $500 or $1,000. So those rent increases happen upon vacancy. The next 2 loopholes on our platform that we're trying to close are the loopholes that apply to tenants to apartments when one tenant moves out and another tenant moves in. So those loopholes include the vacancy bonus and individual apartment improvement increases. The vacancy bonus is a 20% bonus that landlords get simply for an apartment changing hands. It's a really insidious bonus that has caused a huge loss of affordability in the rent stabilized stock, and it causes landlords to harass tenants out of their homes. The next one is apartment improvement increases. So if you live in a rent-stabilized apartment or you recently moved into a rent-stabilized apartment that's really sort of renovated with sort of fake granite countertops and things like that, it's likely that your landlord used IAIs. And IAIs are sort of fake apartment renovations. They happen when a one-bedroom becomes a two-bedroom. If you've heard about construction of harassment, they typically mean IAIs. Those are renovations to individual apartments that landlords can raise on to add onto the rent. Now, because a tenant has to sign off on an individual apartment improvement increase, they typically only happen when nobody is living there. Those are really insidious cost increases that, you know, mean that rent can go up as much as, you know, 40 to 50 or even double in between when one tenant moves out and the next tenant moves in, or even triple. So I want to sort of stop right there and see if folks have any questions or anything to add from Dennis on those first four bills on our platform to eliminate MCIs, IAIs, preferential rents, and the vacancy bonus.
I'm not sure I have anything to add. I think you did a very good summary there. I'd like to say that I myself have a preferential rent, and it angers me so much that it motivated me to get involved in this movement. So there you have it.
So just for our...
And how much is your preferential rent, Dennis?
So the difference between what I actually pay and what I theoretically could pay, thanks to the... is something like $1,200. So what that does is that serves to keep me silent, even in the face of, let's say, my landlord does not heat my apartment adequately in the winter, which, in fact, they do not. I don't call and complain because I worry that... when it comes to the end of my lease renewal, that they can just retaliate, right? They can choose not to renew my lease, or they can choose to suddenly take away that preferential rent and jack up my rent in effect by like $1,200. So I've had to put up with all sorts of substandard conditions in my unit because of that preferential rent.
And that's what people are experiencing all over the city and the state. And, you know, heat is a human right. Hot water is, you know, a human right. These are not things, especially, right, if you're paying rent to your landlord, these are not things that we should have to be fighting for. These are basic human living conditions that people need to survive. And for me, you know, the laws that you've talked about so far, Sia, are not necessarily radical. We're just asking to protect renters across the state and removing geographic restrictions from the Emergency Tenant Protection Act. We're asking for good cause for people who live in smaller apartment buildings, because no matter what size your apartment building is, you should be protected from eviction. You know, these seem to me like very common sense laws.
Yeah. So let me describe another couple bills on our platform that Desiree just brought up. In addition to sort of fixing the problems with rent regulation, we want to expand it. So the next two bills I want to talk about are good cause eviction, which is a right to a renewal lease for every tenant, no matter when their building was built or how many apartments are in their building. And that bill is carried by the DSA State Senator Julia Salazar and the State Senate. And it's one of the most popular bills on our platform. We have 57 assembly members and I believe 26 or 27 senators signed onto that bill. So it's really exciting. It's a really exciting bill that's moving in the state Senate and the state assembly this year that would really expand protections to make sure that everyone is covered. And the other is this good cause is the bill to expand the Emergency Tenant Protection Act. Like I said at the beginning of the show, the Emergency Tenant Protection Act only applies to 8 counties. It's enabling legislation, which means that municipalities can opt in. So if the mayor of Buffalo, for example, wanted to declare a housing emergency and wanted to have legislation to strengthen tenants' rights, right now they wouldn't be allowed to do that because Erie County, where Buffalo is prohibited from opting into rent stabilization, even if they wanted to. So we have a bill on our platform that would change that. that would allow every municipality in the state to opt in to rent stabilization if they think it makes sense for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I want to touch on good cause eviction for a second, because that's the action that I took last Tuesday in Albany. I went to see my state senator, Luis Sepulveda. He's represents the 32nd Senate District in the Bronx, Park Chester, Castle Hill, Soundview, the area that I live in with my family. And I live in an apartment building that's less than six units. It's two units. And so without this good cause eviction bill, I'm at direct threat of being evicted any single day. And that's just not right. You know, housing security, right? Being secure in the fact that you get to keep living in your house. That is something that everyone should have, especially people who have disabilities, people with children, people who are highly susceptible to not being able to move or handle an eviction, easily for them. And overwhelmingly, these groups live in houses or apartment buildings that have less than six units. So I went to Senator Sepulveda's office and I shared my feelings. I think there's a video of that too. But I think that this just makes sense. What do you think, Dennis, about the good cause eviction bill?
I think it's really important because really extending many of the protections we have as tenants to include more people in the state, both geographically and in smaller units, I think is one of the most important things we could do. We're talking about what I've heard roughly like extending those protections to approximately like 2 million people. And that's a lot of people. That's a lot of security that we can bring to communities.
So I'm wondering, Sia or Dennis, have you covered the entirety of the 9 bills, or are there more things that we're fighting for here?
There are more things that we're fighting for. So far, I think we've covered MTIs, IAIs, the vacancy bonus, and preferential rent. We've talked about good cause and ETPA expansion. Our last three bills are about making sure that we aren't losing apartments thanks to deregulation. So we want to eliminate, and then there's one more I'll talk about that's a little different. We want to eliminate vacancy decontrol entirely. So we don't believe that any apartment should be deregulated anymore. Right now, when an apartment gets to about $2,700 a month, a little more than that, it's no longer under rent stabilization. We want to get rid of that. We want to make sure that there is no longer any sort of like threshold for landlords to eliminate rent regulation. And then the second thing that we want to do is we want to expand and reform the four-year rule. So right now, if tenants have identified fraud in their rent history, meaning that their landlord is illegally overcharging them, they only have 4 years to challenge that. Otherwise, the fraud becomes legal. And we want to reform that. We want to make it easier for landlords to challenge their rent histories. Easier for tenants to challenge their rent histories. We really want to sort of strengthen tenant protection, strengthen tenants' ability to hold their landlords accountable for what happens in their homes. And then the final bill is a rent control relief bill. New York has two systems of rent stabilization, of rent regulation. One is rent stabilization, which we've mostly talked about today, and the other is rent control. Rent control only applies to about 20,000 households in the city, in the state, and it's an older form of rent regulation than the rent stabilization system that we have today. Tenants are subject to much higher rent increases than tenants under rent stabilization are subject to, and so we want to bring rent stabilization increases in line with rent control. So those are our 9 bills.
Great. Thank you so much. That was incredibly helpful. So I just have one quick question, which I've seen some people pushing back in particular on the MCI and IAI aspect of these 9 bills, saying that, oh, well, this means that as landlords, they won't be able to maintain their buildings. The Rent Stabilization Association brought out a bunch of contractors saying that, oh, well, we're not going to have any work anymore. I know you referenced fraud earlier. What would you say to people who are concerned about that aspect of the platform?
landlord profit has been going up every year in New York. Right now, I think it's increased, like, net operating income for landlords has increased by something like 64% in the last 10 years. Landlords are making money hand over fist in this state. There was a Rent Cafe, which is a website that sort of ranks and does research for landlord groups, recently ranked New York as one of the most landlord-friendly states in the country, which is pretty interesting because we also have the strongest tenant rates in the country. And so, you know, I think it's pretty clear to everyone that the real estate industry is doing just fine in New York, and we need to pass bills that strengthen tenants' rates.
And while landlords
pay rent, there's plenty of money to make repairs.
Yeah, and while landlord incomes are going up, our wages are not going up. Our cost of living is going up. Our rents are going up. But how much we're getting paid is not going up. And people are just not capable of paying these MCIs and IAIs. So now we're going to go to a station break with Jack.
You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. To connect with us after the show, you can email us at revolutionsnyc@gmail.com or sign up for our newsletter to get links to what we talk about on the show. You can do that on our website, revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com. And you can also find us on Twitter at NYCRPM. Today, we're talking about housing justice. And we're able to bring this to you because WBAI does not take any corporate money. We don't have any advertisers changing our content, restricting the things that we can talk about. Like, unlike when you're, you know, watching MSNBC and then suddenly you have a million ads from pharmaceutical companies, or maybe the military industrial complex just wants to sell you a war as you sit back and watch TV. But that's not what we do here at WBAI. We are listener funded, we are listener sponsored, and we are managed democratically. If you become part of the WBAI team, you can affect how this station is run, because we believe in radical democracy here. We believe in empowering the people. So if you want to become part of the WBAI team, you want to be a contributor, just call in 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. Or you can, you know, hit us up on the web. That's give, the number 2, WBAI.org. That's give to WBAI.org. Or you can text WBAI to 41444. So if you want more socialist content like we have here at Revolutions Per Minute, where we're talking about housing justice and the organizing that's going on to really build tent power in the city, or last week where we had sex workers live on air sharing their experiences, where do you get that in the media other than a place like WBAI? So please become part of the team. Thank you very much.
So thank you so much. So I'm going to go through the bills one more time. So the bills are as follows. First of all, one, expand renters' rights to cover the whole state. Remove geographic restrictions on the Emergency Tenant Protection Act. Two, pass new good cause eviction legislation to bring renters' rights to small tenants in smaller buildings and in manufactured home communities. Three, end the vacancy decontrol loophole. No apartment should be deregulated by a landlord, even if the rent is over $2,400. Four, end rent hikes and tenant harassment caused by loopholes in rent control by making preferential rate rents permanent. Five, eliminate the vacancy bonus. Under rent stabilization, landlords receive a 20% statutory vacancy bonus every time they turn an apartment over. That's why they like to push us out, so they can put new people in and charge them more money. Six, eliminate permanent rent hikes caused by MCIs. And seven, by IAIs, individual apartment increases. Those should not lead to permanent rent hikes. Seven, that'd be eight now, reform the four-year look-back rule, change it to 6 years, and provide an exception so tenants can hold their landlords accountable to following the law in court. And then nine, rent control relief. Bring rent control increases in line with the standard rent guideline board increases.
And just for folks to know, these nine bills need to pass our state assembly, our state senate, and then be signed by our governor in order to be passed into law. Our current rent stabilization laws, the framework that governs them, expires on June 15th of this year, which is just about at the end of the state legislative session. So right now, we're really in the crunch time of making the case to our lawmakers why we need this action and why we need it right now. So since this is such an evocative issue, everybody has a housing story, everybody has to live somewhere, we'd love to open up the phone lines for folks to talk to us about their experiences, whether it's with tenant organizing, landlord abuse, if you have questions about the legislation, or some other question.
Yeah, please share your stories about abuse by your landlord, tenant organizing in your building, how you've gotten involved. So the phone number for that is 212-209-2877. Again, that phone number is 212-209-2877. So I grew up in a slumlord building, one of the worst in the city. We were always in the daily news with our landlord. And for me growing up, that was my normal. You know, roaches and rats and no heat and hot water and mold in my ceiling. And that's how I grew up and lived. And I had negative health effects from living there. But my mom fought with CASA, a tenants' rights organization. They fought for 20 years and they finally defeated our landlord in court. And now they have gotten some tenant protections back in that building. But people shouldn't have to fight for 20 years to have hot water and heat and vermin control. These are all things that people should have a right to.
And just for our listeners, what does CASA stand for? Community Action for Safe Apartments. Look them up online.
Yeah, they're a great tenants' rights organization. And if you're interested in starting a tenants' association in your building, you can contact CASA and they will actually help you organize that. So, yeah, what about you, Michael? Do you have any, has it been hard for you to find a place to rent? Have you had any hardships?
Not so many, you know, real hardships. I just, part of the process of after college, right, I went to school here in the city, and then I came down to Brooklyn. And really that was where I became radicalized, because I saw the ways in which the landlords had completely made it so that me as a tenant and my neighbors did not have the power to change anything. I found out through a city website that my landlord had gotten a exemption called J51, which basically is one of these ways to renovate an apartment and therefore make the rent skyrocket. So this is a typical kind of glass and steel, new-looking building. Our stairs actually would break. We had like just kind of wooden plywood stairs that would break. But because of the way the law was written, there was no one following up on the beat, checking that the landlord wasn't committing fraud, checking that the amount that they raised the rent was the amount that they actually spent on the building.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that some of these loopholes would help address, closing some of these loopholes would help address that. So we have two callers on the line. First caller, you're on.
That me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, hi. I just wanted to say, as someone who was involved in the great rent battle 22 years ago when the Republican governor and Republican state Senate majority leader were determined to end New York City's rent laws, and they ended up coming up with a compromise that, fortunately, the Democratic Speaker of the Assembly went along with, that included vacancy decontrol, that in your summary of the nine bills, I think you understated a little how important that is, because the fact that they introduced this rent level beyond which if a tenant moved out, the apartment could not remain rent-regulated, has just had a catastrophic, I mean really catastrophic effect. I mean, there's maybe a million rent-stabilized apartments left and maybe 40,000 or less rent-controlled, but there were probably hundreds of thousands, maybe 300,000 or more additional units that have been lost to rent regulation because people moved out. Landlords were able to do some improvements, raise the rent, and once it hit that level, it was out of rent regulation. So that, to me, it's huge and probably the most important in a lot of ways of all these nine bills, because once an apartment's lost to rent regulations, it's gone.
Yeah,
and
it's not coming
back. You know,
back.
A market rate apartment that they can charge thousands a month for. And so anyway, I just wanted to weigh in with that.
No, thank you so much for sharing those numbers. And I'm not understating any of the nine bills. We are demanding that our elected officials pass all nine bills. They are all important. They all protect tenants across the state. And we want them to pass all nine bills. But Sia, maybe you can talk a little bit about rent deregulation if you're still on the line.
I'm still on the line, yeah. I think one of the amazing things about the rent fight this year is just how far we have come. And I think that vacancy decontrol and the prospect of repealing it, and I don't want to take anything for granted in Albany, is an amazing thing. And again, I don't want to take anything for granted in Albany. I want to say that one of the things that I'm excited about is that all three houses have come out in support of repealing vacancy decontrol. The governor, the Senate, and the Assembly all support that. Of course, the devil is in the details. Even some of the landlord industry folks have come out in support of repealing vacancy decontrol. And I don't want to take anything for granted, but I am confident that we are going to repeal deregulation this year. The details that are really important is, what about the hundreds of thousands of units that have already been lost? What are we going to do to expand protections and re-regulate apartments that have already been lost to the market? How can we make sure that the system is expanded to protect everybody? And how do we make sure that the system stays affordable? One of the things that is true is about the Housing Justice for All campaign is that vacancy deregulation is a sort of a neighborhood by neighborhood thing. And in parts of the Bronx, for example, our groups in the Bronx, deregulation impacts them, of course, but, you know, they're being destroyed by major capital improvement increases, and so are parts of Queens. And it's really the places where the landlords and the tenants are really fighting in this session are around good cause and major capital improvement increases. Because in a lot of ways, we've won consensus on some of the other stuff. Again, I don't want to take anything for granted.
So I do believe we have another caller. Hello, you're on the air, WBAI.
Hello, Tom from the Bronx here.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Yeah, I'd like to say this, that the projects that are in very, very poor shape, that they want to pour a lot of money into, it would be better financially to build new projects, and in other words, on that maybe the same vicinity, you know, of the land is, and they take the tenants that are in these miserable places and then put them in the new projects and then knock down the old projects. That would probably be better money, better spent.
Yeah, I mean, we're really talking today about privately owned homes and how we are regulating rents in apartment buildings that private landlords own. So we're talking about adjusting the power imbalance between landlords and renters, which isn't necessarily the NYCHA apartment complexes.
Yeah, but don't get me wrong. There is a housing crisis in NYCHA. My grandmother lives in Morrisania Air Rights. It's a 20-story NYCHA housing building in the South Bronx. And sometimes both elevators are broken and seniors are trapped downstairs because only seniors or upstairs in their apartment because only seniors live in that building. So NYCHA definitely has a housing crisis too. And that's something that we hope to address in the future.
Absolutely.
So we want to welcome you to call us in at our show. The phone number to call WBAI is 212-209-2877. Again, that phone number is 212-209-2877. And we want you to share how you can be supported by these bills passing in office, what kind of housing struggles you're going through in your daily life. How many times have you moved in the last 5-10 years? What does that look like for you? Have you had to change jobs? Have you had to, you know, not be close to family because we live in a housing crisis in New York State? So call in and tell us what you're going through.
Or even also, if you have a question about the legislation, if one of these 9 bills doesn't sound like a good idea to you, we have the policy expert on the line ready to allay your concerns.
Great. So I think we have a caller. So WBAI, you're on the air.
Oh, hello. You know the public housing, right?
Yes.
Maybe you can explain something to me. How can they have preferential rent? I thought that was federal.
So that's actually a policy relating to privately owned housing, not public housing?
I'm in public housing, and I got a lease with preferential rent on it. I've been getting it for the last few years. So yeah. Recently they switched us to RAD, and I'm still getting a preferential
rent. Yeah. So if you have RAD, it's possible that you have a preferential rent. What you can do is, you can contact us off the air, and we can talk through what's going on with your lease. I can give you my phone number if you'd like.
One second. Okay.
Okay, it's 585-315.
585. Say it again.
315-315.
Okay.
0826.
0826. Let me read it back. 585, right?
Yep. 315.
0826.
Yep.
Great. And I think we have one more caller, so thank you for sharing your story. So, WBAI, you're on the air. Hello? Can you hear us?
Hi. My name is Victor Monterosa. I'm calling. I've been a tenant organizer since about 2007. I started working on the housing crisis with homeless folks, and I've worked in all kinds of housing. I love WBAI. I've been listening to it since I was 15, but there's one thing that's usually missing from BAI, and that's the New Jersey perspective. And I'm from Newark, and I really want to push through that we have a serious housing problem in this city. We are constantly under attack because there are developers who are just thirsting over the prime real estate that's here, and there are several speculators that are just causing prices to go up. Meanwhile, we have a large organized group of tenants. Right now, I'm proud to be part of a group called Homes for All Newark, and we're part of the larger Homes for All movement. There's folks in New York, there's folks in all across the country, but people are fighting for their tenants' rights. And even in Jersey, where we have the eviction only for cause and we have pretty strong tenants' rights, we're still missing municipal local support. I'm happy someone called about NYCHA because the Newark Housing Authority here is, like every housing authority, in my opinion, incredibly corrupt and inept. And unfortunately, even though we have a mayor that's known as some kind of revolutionary or some kind of progressive. Mayor Barata allowed our rent control ordinance to fall apart. He allowed for the inclusionary zoning ordinance that we recently won to not be enforced. He allowed for the inability to find out what it is, where these monies are going that developers are putting in that are supposed to go to affordable housing. So, I just want to let people know that in New York and anyone who's listening to this show over the internet that we're fighting, we're struggling in Newark, we're going to continue doing that, and it doesn't matter who's in the office sometimes, you got to keep fighting. Today, we just got a stove in our apartment, me and my wife and our twins, that we had to fight for 4 months. Change is possible, you just have to be consistent.
Thank you so much, Victor, for bringing that perspective. We definitely need to remember that while New York City is a very hot real estate market, New York State is also hot, that this is really a nationwide crisis, and we need to have solidarity across state borders and across national borders regarding this. Me personally, I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and we're dealing with, even though the rent sort of where it starts is at a different level, we're dealing with a lot of the same issues in terms of speculators and profiteers buying up land in order to make profit, and thereby bankrolling politicians who, it sounds like the mayor of Newark may have some of that going on. So yeah, thank you so much for bringing in the New Jersey perspective.
And, you know, it's important to remember that, you know, part of what's leading to this issue in New Jersey is that people can't find apartments in New York City or in, you know, in Westchester and upstate New York. So then they flood over to New Jersey, putting strain, like you said, already on systems that are suffering under their own housing crisis. So it's important that, you know, we may be different states, but we're going through the same thing.
And so, I also want to stress that these bills are incredibly important for the ongoing ability of working class people to build power in New York. But, you know, you mentioned revolutionary change. Me personally, I don't think they constitute the kind of revolutionary change that we should be ultimately fighting for. I think that we need to pass it this session. I think this stuff is incredibly desirable. But we really have to move towards a world where housing is a human right and where land and housing is decommodified completely.
So how are we going to win in Albany with these 9 bills? It's only with your support. So I've got 4 things that you can do in the next few days to get involved in the Housing Justice for All campaign. Because like Michael said earlier, there's less than 30 days to get these bills passed. So first, I want you to call your state-level representatives and urge them to pass all 9 bills as a package. Even if they are already sponsors, it's important to show that their constituents support this. So how do you find out who represents you in Albany? You can go to mygovnyc.org. That's mygovnyc.org. And enter your address, and it'll tell you who your representatives are. The second action item is today is Tenant Tuesday, the same with every Tenant Tuesday until we win housing justice. So join the discussion on housing rights on your favorite social media platform. Remember to tag your elected officials. Many of them are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram too. And mention if you're a constituent in their district. The third action is to donate at housingjusticeforall.org. And number 4, follow the Housing Justice for All campaign on Twitter and Facebook at Housing for All NY. Again, that's at Housing for All NY. And if you want to get in touch with Sia Weaver, who was our policy expert on today's episode, her email is cweaver, C-W-E-A-V-E-R, at tandn.org. And Michael, I think there's an event coming up with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez that has to do with housing.
Absolutely. So there is going to be an event with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the congresswoman, in the Bronx at the Sands. If you are interested in attending, you should email bxparkeast@gmail.com. It's a sort of a you have to reserve to get in because the capacity is not limitless, but at any, in any rate, it's really good to see someone with that kind of profile supporting our cause.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, contact your representatives, urge them to pass all 9 bills as a package. And if you look up Housing Justice for All, you'll be able to find out which bill specifically your elected officials aren't supporting. Again, Tenant Tuesday, talk with us on social media. Tell us your housing story. I know that a lot of us have moved way too much. A lot of us have suffered under predatory landlords that want to harm us in order to save $10, $15 and not repair a boiler every month. So We really need to join together and to fight for housing justice for all in New York State.
So you've been
listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. To connect with us after the show, you can email us at revolutionsnyc@gmail.com or sign up for our weekly newsletter to get links to what we talk about on the show. You can do that on our website at revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com. You can also find us on Twitter at NYCRPM. Today, we were talking about the fight for housing justice and specifically the bills about in this upcoming session. In order to find out this kind of info, you need to have a place like WBAI that broadcasts this kind of material, that connects you with organizers and activists on the ground and with journalists who are willing to stand up to the corporate media rather than bow down just to get a nice opportunistic gig. So we need places like WBAI. This WBAI and Revolutions Per Minute are part of the same struggle. We're fighting for people-powered society, and this is a people-powered radio station. And you can become part of WBAI by calling 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. Call this number. Pledge in our name. If you love Revolutions Per Minute, if you feel like we're connecting you with the type of material that you want to listen to, please give us a call, give WBAI a call, and donate in our name. So that's 516-620-3602, or you can go online and pledge at give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org. Or you can text 41444, and you can text WBAI to 41444. Please become part of this movement to have people-powered media that's really pushing forward the democratic social struggle. All right, guys,